Nearly 6 months of war. 31,700 people killed and counting. Thousands more are under rubble. We're of course talking about Gaza. Barely any working hospitals, with snipers and Israeli tanks stationed outside, still looking for members of Hamas. In the meantime, it seems like talks of a truce have been going on for months with no real results. But every second that the guns keep going is another where a child or an adult is wounded or is killed, if not by weapons, then by disease, if not by disease, then by hunger. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is still committed to an incursion into the southern Gazan city of Rafah, despite clear objections and pressure from US President Joe Biden. And both leaders have spoken this week for the first time in a month, amid a deepening rift. This is Beyond the Headlines, and I'm your host, Nada Altahar. In this episode, we look into where we're at so far with a potential truce, all the players involved there, why it's taking so long, and how Israel has been handling the operations so far inside Gaza. First, we talked to the National's own correspondent, Hamza Hindawi, who has been following and covering negotiations for a potential and seemingly imminent truce for months. Hamza, it seems that there are conversations that are taking place about a ceasefire in Gaza, with the main focus being the negotiations in Qatar. Can you tell us about these conversations and where we're at right now?
Well, I mean, the negotiations in Qatar began earlier this week, and this is the latest round of negotiations that have been going on for the past 3 months plus with mediators from Qatar, the United States and Egypt trying to broker a new ceasefire. Obviously, the Israelis and Hamas, they both have their conditions for a ceasefire deal. And at the moment, counter proposals are being sent back to Hamas to see if they would agree to new elements. Israel has already dismissed as unrealistic the latest Hamas proposals. And the main sticking point, as far as I can tell, is the details involving the swap of prisoners for hostages, the degree to which Israel would pull out from Gaza, and the number and the identity of some of the people that Hamas wants to see released from Israeli prison.
So, Hamza, what does Hamas want? What does Israel want? And what are the points of contention?
Right. Hamas wants to emerge from this war as the victorious party, having withstood the Israeli onslaught for more than 5 months. What Hamas wants is a complete Israeli withdrawal from Gaza. Hamas also wants all the displaced to be able to return to their homes in central and northern Gaza. Hamas also wants thousands of Palestinian prisoners released in exchange for the hostages it is holding. Hamas also wants these prisoners, these Palestinian prisoners, to include very high-profile Palestinian leaders who are incarcerated by Israel. Top of the list is Marwan Barghouti of Fatah, somebody who has been widely tipped as a possible replacement for the current president, Mahmoud Abbas. Hamas also wants a timeline, a specific timeline for the reconstruction of Gaza. And in the meantime, it wants relief or humanitarian assistance to be delivered to Gaza, including tent camps and temporary accommodation for all those people who have lost their homes in Gaza, and there are many. As we know, about 60% of all homes in Gaza have been destroyed. Now, let's turn our attention to Israel. Israel's views on how it sees or how it views this war ending differs. there's a lot of politics involved here on the part of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, whose political future is shrouded in uncertainty. And he also has an interest in emerging victorious from this war. As far as he's concerned, or as far as his government is concerned, a victory for Israel would be the total annihilation of Hamas, something that, in my view, is impossible to achieve. He also wants to retain an overriding security role in Gaza after the war ends. He does not want the PA in any form or shape to come back to Gaza. And he wants, apart from dismantling Hamas's military capabilities, he wants Hamas entirely removed from even the political scene in Gaza. Again, another virtually impossible demand to be met. So this is where they stand. And the difference is the gap is huge. And the mediators in Qatar are trying to bridge that gap. It's an uphill task. It's not easy by no means. But they keep at it.
Break it down for us. Will there ever be a point at which Israel and Hamas agree? Because it seems that Hamas is doubling down on wanting all the prisoners to be released, and that's not something that Israel is buying into. Are there actual developments, or is this just a stalemate that's just been in existence for the past several months?
Well, nothing is impossible. I mean, after all, we did have a week-long truce back in late November when Hamas released about 100 hostages and Israel released Palestinian prisoners, perhaps twice the number of the hostages released. So nothing is really impossible, but it's a very, very vexingly difficult situation for the mediators because we're talking here about two sworn enemies, arch enemies, at war, and it is the longest, by far, the longest war Hamas and Israel fought since Hamas took over Gaza in 2007. A lot of people have been killed, both in Israel and in Gaza. So there's, it's not easy to have two parties like Israel and Hamas in this situation to come to an agreement. However, like I said earlier, it's not impossible. Israel is coming under mounting pressure, not just from the United States, but also from the international community at large. The criticism is over how it is conducting the war. The criticism is over Israel's alleged use of food as a weapon. Israel is now, some top politicians in Europe and in North America are accusing Israel of using food as a weapon, not committing war crimes. We've never seen this before. The West has more or less been firmly behind Israel for decades now, but things have changed now. So it's coming under mounting pressure. The image of Israel as this island of democracy in the Middle East is being slowly dismantled in the minds and in the hearts of millions of people in the West who are watching the images coming out of Gaza and what Israel is doing to them. But let's not fool ourselves as to the extent of, say, Washington's pressure on Israel. Because while Washington is criticizing Israel for the excessive use of force or not paying too much attention to civilian casualties, I mean, the bombs still come from America. The aircraft that dropped the bomb are American. The United States has provided Israel with billions of dollars worth of weapons since the war began 5 months ago. So yeah, pressure. But still, I think the United States is giving Israel what it needs to conduct the war the way it's conducting, which falls way below the international law regarding conflict. Now, Hamas. Hamas is also coming under a great deal of pressure from the Egyptians and from the Qataris, because Hamas wants to survive politically and wants also perhaps to survive as a military force that's opposed to Israel. And for that to continue, Hamas needs the support of Qatar, for example, and perhaps to a lesser extent, Egypt. Hamas's political leadership in exile, they have vast economic interests in places like Turkey and Qatar, countries that provide some Hamas leaders with a safe haven where they can live and lead semi-normal lives. So pressure is on both sides to come to an agreement. However, an agreement, it doesn't mean that the enmity between Hamas and Israel will end. It will just mean that the fifth war between Hamas and Israel, which is the deadliest and the longest, will come to an end, but they will probably fight another day.
Hamza, more than 13,000 children have been killed so far. So if all the hostages were released, wouldn't Israel have more leeway to conduct operations more freely? And wouldn't Hamas lose its edge?
Hamas has no intention whatsoever to release all the hostages until all its demands are met, immediate and midterm demands. So not all hostages are equal in the eyes of Hamas. So Hamas will deliver the 40 to 45 hostages made up of children, ailing people, elderly people, and women in the first exchange for Palestinian prisoners. Then we have an estimated 5 female Israeli soldiers. And these, for them, Hamas would expect Israel to release a great deal more prisoners than in the initial phase. And then we will have the active male military personnel, Israeli military personnel, of course, that are in Hamas's custody. Now, that would be the last patch, and that patch would not be released until Hamas sees that Israel ends this war and a permanent ceasefire in force, and probably Hamas will hold on to these people until it can get even more concessions from Israel. And it's going to be a very long process. This thing is not going to wrap up anytime soon. But you're right. If Hamas hands over all the hostages, Israel will just simply resume its military operations in Gaza until it achieves its goal of entirely destroying Hamas. So, you know, we all know Hamas are no fools. They will hold on to the last patch or the middle patch, and they would only be releasing hostages. I mean, the release of hostages by Hamas would be hinging or conditional on how much of Hamas demands are met. So, like I said, it's going to be a very, very long process. I mean, I can only recall the case of the Israeli soldier Shalit, who was in Hamas's custody for years. And when he was released, Hamas got 1,000 Palestinian prisoners in exchange for his freedom. And let's just remember that those 1,000 included Yahya Sinwar, the most dangerous Hamas leader in Gaza and Israel's most wanted man. So it's, yes, you're right, Hamas will not easily or casually hand over hostages. It will hold on to them until all its demands are met.
So Hamza, what are the details of the Hamas proposals and how did Israel react?
Israel's reaction to all Hamas proposals have been very dismissive, but that's the political reaction. The actual Israeli negotiators who go and meet up with the Egyptians and the Americans and the Qataris in either Doha, Cairo, Paris, or sometimes in Ramallah is quite different. But I'm not going to get into the Israeli, the complexities or the details of Israeli politics behind that. But what's on the table at the moment, what Hamas wants at the moment, is can be summed up perhaps as the following. A six-week initial ceasefire, during which the Israeli forces redeploy outside built-up areas, i.e. cities, and clear two main roads in Gaza, Al-Rashid and Salah al-Din, to allow the displaced to safely return to their home and to allow the swift and secure delivery of humanitarian assistance across the Gaza Strip. Hamas is also proposing to release between 40 and 45 hostages made up of women, elderly people, ailing people, and children. In return, Hamas has accepted at least 1,500 Palestinian prisoners. So that's the first phase. In the second phase, Hamas expects, which is another 6 weeks, which Hamas expects the Israelis to complete the withdrawal from Gaza. And during that phase, Hamas would be willing to swap the five female Israeli soldiers believed to be in its custody for 50 Palestinian prisoners in exchange for every female soldier. And out of those 50, Hamas wants 30 of them to be high-profile Palestinian figures who are serving long jail terms or life sentences. So that would be the second phase. The third phase is open-ended. During that third phase, Hamas will accept neutral forensic experts to come and run tests on the remains of what we know to be at least 30 hostages who have died in custody to determine their identity. And then there would be the active service Israeli members of the military who would be swapped in batches in exchange for thousands of Palestinian prisoners. The figure has been reduced by Hamas as a compromise from 5,000, and I believe it stands now at about 3,000. But this is a tricky phase, because during that open-ended phase, Hamas expects some ironclad promises from Israel, guaranteed by the mediators, including the United States, that there will be a permanent ceasefire, there will be peace in Gaza. Hamas also wants a precise timeline for the reconstruction of Gaza. Day after scenarios about the running of Gaza, who governs Gaza after the war finally ends, is a matter of intense debate, because of the rivalry, or let's call it the enmity, between Hamas and the PA in Ramallah. It's also because Israel is objecting to Hamas' role even in running the country. Also, we know that Israel has been trying, without much success in the last few weeks, to enlist the support of perceived anti-Hamas tribal forces in Gaza that it intends to use as the local administration of Gaza. That would, of course, be beholden to the Israeli government of the day. So this is what's on the table. These are the latest Hamas proposals. I understand that amendments have been made to these proposals. So we have counter proposals that will be sent to Hamas, perhaps at some point this week, and then the mediators will expect Hamas to give its response to them. So this is where we stand now. There are, however, I understand, some secret agreement or secret clauses to the proposals that are being looked at the moment. These I have very little idea of, no idea at all of what they might contain, but I understand they have to do with the little details or the nitty-gritty of some aspects of the proposed deal. So that's all we know.
Thank you, Hamza. I also spoke to retired Lieutenant General Mark Schwartz, who is a former U.S. Security Coordinator for Israel and the Palestinian Authority, and currently a senior fellow at RAND Corporation. During our talk, we discussed Israel's ongoing operations inside Gaza, the humanitarian situation there, and the U.S.-Israel relationship as it stands. But first, on Monday, Israel launched an attack on Al-Shifa Hospital, the largest medical complex in Gaza's north. There, at least 30,000 people who were displaced came under siege, as well as medics and, of course, injured patients and their companions. On Wednesday, Al-Shifa remains under siege. One doctor described bodies littered on the ground, uncovered and unburied. The people inside are fasting, in Ramadan, without being able to break their fast for iftar, with no food and no running water. 2 days after Israel's operation in Al-Shifa began, Israel said it killed 90 people and detained 300 others. Over half of those were taken to Israel. Back to Lieutenant General Schwartz, who I asked if we're going to be seeing more quote-unquote targeted operations by Israel in Gaza.
On the ongoing combat operations by the Israeli Defense Forces, I'm not surprised that we're seeing a lesser aggressive IDF during the month of Ramadan. But I do think that you're going to see a continued number of smaller scale offensive operations to include special operations raids, because rightfully so, they need to keep the tempo up against Hamas to do all they can to prevent them from consolidating, regrouping and repositioning. What you saw in Al-Shifa Hospital is a great example of that, where an area that's already been cleared and is predominantly used by the sick and wounded that have come out through the conflict, or just those that need medical care. Hamas brought a number of its operatives in there to really seek safe haven, I think, potentially plan future operations. So I'm not surprised that we saw the IDF go in and conduct operations there. I think going forward, you're going to see these types of operations, I think, even after the end of Ramadan.
Mark, what does all this do for the global perception of Israel and the way it's been conducting itself inside Gaza?
The United States leadership has clearly been putting an extreme amount of pressure on Prime Minister Netanyahu to not conduct a major offensive in Rafah, because, again, there's now a million plus Palestinian civilians that are concentrated and have no place to go because of, candidly, Israel's failure to provide humanitarian aid to the population, which is their responsibility as an invading, power into the Gaza Strip. They know that. Prime Minister Netanyahu actually acknowledged his responsibility, his government's responsibility for providing to the Palestinian population inside of Gaza during an interview last Sunday with CNN. However, what we've seen on the ground is falling well short of the minimum requirements of providing shelter, food, water, sanitation, and medical aid to the Palestinian population. And unfortunately, I don't see the situation getting any better in the near term. Israel, at the coaxing of the U.S. administration, the international community, certainly the Arab governments across the region in the Middle East, have been encouraged to provide support as they're responsible to the Palestinian population. They could have opened up land bridges, multiple land bridges from Israel into the Gaza Strip. They could have opened up the maritime route that is now just starting to get put in place with the temporary pier that the United States is building. And they could have been addressing these requirements many months ago. But because of their failure to do so and almost their obstinance to support and protect innocent Palestinians, we now have this crisis that is unfolded, and it's going to take a very long time, I think, several more weeks before we're going to see the amount of resources come into the Strip that are necessary to care for the population.
How did we get here, where the only way to bring an aid into northern Gaza is through airdrops?
The airdrops that have taken place by Jordan, now by the United States, you know, they are doing very little to alleviate the human suffering that's taking place. And I also think it's hard to watch the fact that, you know, Israel, because of their operations, as a result of the horrific instances that took place on 7 October. So I do believe that their operations are justified, that they need to eliminate Hamas as a military capability and as a governing, you know, entity inside of the Gaza Strip. But the way in which they're doing it is a real question, obviously, by, you know, those of us that have served and those that, you know, at the highest levels of our administration and across the international community. So that's not the issue at hand. The issue is they're really dismissing, I think, Israel, their responsibility of addressing the humanitarian crisis that has unfolded. And now they're, you know, allowing the United States and other nations that have the capability and the capacity and the will to try to assist this humanitarian crisis. But ultimately, it's Israel's responsibility.
Opening up the land routes into Gaza through Rafah and Karam Abu Salem are especially important, not only now, where less than half of what Gazans used to get before the war is entering through, at a time when their needs are skyrocketing, but also in the future of Gaza, for rebuilding it. We'll continue to bring you the latest on Gaza, but also more about what the future may hold for the millions who are trapped there, with barely a glimmer of hope in sight, and doctors warning that a ground invasion could turn Gaza apocalyptic. This is Beyond the Headlines. This episode was produced by Arthur Edison and Dua Farid, and I'm your host, Nada Al-Tahir. I'm sure that you're already subscribed, but if you're not, please do.